Hey, everybody, I'm Shannon, and this is the They Hid What podcast, a podcast where I discuss parts of history that have been kept hidden or swept under the rug. In this week's episode, I will be discussing the Cincinnati Privy Disaster. Let's get into it. Okay, so September 23rd, 1904 in Cincinnati, Ohio was a pretty dreary one. It was still warm from the summer months, but a storm could be seen rolling in. It's a Friday, and the students at the Pleasant Ridge School were antsy. So, Principal Thomas L. Zimmerman thought it might be nice to let them play outside before the storm came. The doors opened, and the children came flooding out, scattering themselves across the play yard. Once all the children were out, Principal Zimmerman went across the hall to talk with one of the teachers. Only a few minutes passed before the clouds opened up and the rain poured down. Now, most of the children ran back towards the school, but about 30 girls made their way to an outhouse. So an outhouse, or a privy, as it's called in this case, it was a 10 feet by 10 feet structure that sat atop a 12 foot deep stone vault, or like a stone box. So essentially, there was a big hole in the ground, 12 feet deep, sided with concrete, and then a building was set on top of it. So like a house on top of a giant hole in the ground. So this was an outhouse. It's just not the ones that we're used to seeing in movies. It was a small building with bench-like seating along the walls, and each bench had a small cutout for the child to sit over and go to the bathroom. So the waste then fell 8 feet down into the stone vault below. By this time in the story, 1904, the outhouse was 11 years old and 4 feet of waste had already accumulated. So over the years, it'd been repaired several times, and just 1 year prior, new seats, flooring, and siding were installed. It is of note that the carpenter that laid the new floor over the old one did not inspect the joists, which are the beams that the floorboards sit on. But he still considered the building sound. So, interesting. Panic soon set in to 14-year-old Elsie Shore. She was the first to enter the privy, but as she saw more and more girls squeeze in, she had, quote, a vision of a collapsing floor. No one wants to fall through a floor, especially one of an outhouse. So Elsie tried to make her way back to the door, but kept getting pushed back inside by those trying to escape the rain. Hazel Sonor, 12, was another girl that made it out of the rain and into the privy. As she shivered, she heard someone say, "Oh, what if this would break down with us here?" Unfortunately, this became a reality. Without warning, the joists of one side of the building gave way under the weight of the children, and without a second to think, the entire floor fell to the bottom of the vault with all of the girls in it. There were between 31 and 35 girls in the privy when the floor collapsed, and some were as young as 7 years old. Edna Girk, 14, said, "When I arrived there, I could hardly get inside the door. I managed to squeeze in, but then before any of us knew the danger or could get out, the floor gave way." "There was no crash at all," says Elsie Gergesen, 16. "There was no noise whatever. The floor just fell. That's all there was to it. Not a child scream that I heard. I felt the floor going and jumped quickly, clutching to the side of the door. I was left hanging to it. And with all my strength, I pulled myself up and out of the place." 5 other girls were able to escape. Some pulled themselves up onto the toilet seats or the benches and then hopped over to the door. The ones that didn't escape were drowning in a 4 foot deep pool of human waste. So clutching to anything they could find, trying to climb over anyone close by to get out of the vault and back into the play yard. "With desperation, I freed myself and looking up saw daylight, which I never expected to behold again," said Edna. The Cincinnati Inquirer reported the weaker ones were crushed down by the stronger and forced under the mass of filth to their death. So I cannot even imagine. You think you're just going out for recess before the rain sets in. You go to the closest, you know, structure or port of safety you can find. And then shortly after that, you're now stuck. You're trapped. I don't know. Lorena Ferguson was just about to enter the privy when the floor collapsed. Thankfully, 8-year-old Clara Steinkamp had pulled her back by the dress, saving her from the disaster. When Clara saw the full scope of what was happening, she ran to the school for help. Principal Zimmerman wrote, "A few minutes later, two of the little girls ran into the room and exclaimed that a girl had fallen into the vault. I did not realize the awful calamity that had overcome us, but hurried in the direction of the outbuilding. On the way, I met a number of others. They were screaming wildly at the top of their voices, and it was some time before one of them could compose herself sufficiently to explain what had happened. Another girl had run into a high school classroom and told the teacher, Una Venable, what happened. Miss Venable and her 4 male students rushed outside. Unfortunately, cries of Mama and Papa could be heard by William Schultz, 20, and John Carroll, 18, at the Presbyterian church across the street. While they couldn't see into the privy from their vantage point, they knew they had to help, and so they raced over. They, along with Reverend Lambert, met Principal Zimmerman, who was half mad with anguish, at the small doorway. The two men pushed Zimmerman aside and looked into the privy, seeing the girls struggling for rescue. Zimmerman was able to compose himself and shout for rope and ladders. While he waited, he lay down on the ground and tried to reach the girls. So what he was doing was he was laying on his stomach and dropping his hands over the doorway, the opening, into the vault to see if anybody could reach his hands. But when he realized he couldn't reach, William and John picked up his legs and lowered him into the vault, where they were able to rescue 3 girls. The ropes and ladders arrived, but were of no help. The ladders were step ladders and were too short, and the ropes were actually clotheslines and couldn't hold the weight of a child. Hazel Snore tells it, "Mr. Zimmerman reached down a rope and told me to grab it. I wrapped around my hand and he drew me up pretty near the top when the rope broke and I fell back again. I sank down and a hand pulled me under. When a second rope snapped the same manner, James Smith, 16, climbed into the bell tower and took the rope from the bell. This rope was able to save 2 girls. One of the boys found a longer ladder in a barn and dropped it through the privy doorway. It didn't reach all the way from the bottom of the vault to the door opening, but it was enough for Zimmerman to climb down and start picking up the girls. He would grab a child and pass them up the ladder to another man who kept passing until the child was out of the privy and whisked away into one of the schoolrooms. It was said that the girls were unrecognizable, quote, their eyes clenched shut as they sobbed and gasped for breath. Hazel was in a constant battle while in the hole and kept praying to be saved. She was eventually lifted out. Edna Girk, who made it to the privy just before the floor gave out, grabbed onto a rock and pulled herself up. She held on, waited, and was eventually pulled up the ladder. By this time, the rain had stopped, but people around the school kept running towards the screens. Neighbors offered their homes to the rescued girls where they could get cleaned up and recover. One man that showed up was John Steinkamp, who ran 2 blocks from his shop to the school. His 2 daughters, Emma, 12, and Clara, 8, were students at Pleasant Ridge. Clara ran over to him and he held her in his arms. So a few years before this incident, the Steinkamp family had already lost a son due to a skull fracture, and the thought of losing another child was terrifying to John. He had to wait at the privy opening and hope to see the face of his Emma. Zimmerman has pulled 19 girls out of the vault and up the ladder to safety. Taking a moment to catch his breath, he stared into the vault and saw that all was still. Now his body was allowing him to feel the exhaustion of what he had just done, and his adrenaline waned. So a few people brought him up the ladder and out onto the lawn and felt relief that it was all over. William Schultz and John Carroll from the church across the street weren't so sure it was over. So they offered to go down the ladder into the vault and make sure everybody was out. And once inside, Schultz bumped into the body of Flora Force and brought her up the ladder. She was still alive. John Steinkamp wanted to find his daughter so badly, but was too distraught to help in the search. So he continued to wait and yell, "My girl is in there." The rescue continued and word was spreading through the village. And by the time every girl was pulled out of the vault, hundreds of parents had arrived hoping to find their child safe and alive. Nine more girls had been pulled out of the vault. One of the parents that came looking for their child, Dr. Ulysses G. Sonor, had given the unconscious girls injections of nitroglycerin in an attempt to revive them, but none of the final nine girls could be revived. The bodies were moved from the open yard into a classroom. Two sisters, Carmen, 7, and Fausta, 11, had been found holding each other in their arms and were laid out that way. One of the nine bodies was that of Emma Steinkamp. Her anguished father cried, "It's my girl, poor Emma. She left home this morning in the best of spirits. I never expected to see her brought back like this." Which is true. And I mean, something like this in this day and age is a little bit different, but it's every parent's nightmare. You think you're just dropping your kid off at school for the day and you'll see them like normal at the end. And then, you know, tragedy can strike. So by the time the 28 children had been pulled from the vault and moved out of the yard, it was 12:30 in the afternoon and the sun had finally come out. The coroner arrived and went to the classroom to look over the bodies. Dr. Sonor moved Stella Carell and Flora Force to his home. The surviving 19 children were taken to different homes in the neighborhood, but no one was keeping track of where they went. So parents spent hours tracking down their child. Principal Zimmerman and the teachers sobbed with the parents who lost their daughters. The village fire department was called out to pump out the rest of the vault. Coroner Walter Weaver went out to inspect the outhouse and declared, "Rotten, rotten, rotten. Everything was rotten. Those joists would not hold anything." Well, let's not forget, it was just inspected a few years before and was fine. They just threw down a new floor and called it a day. But by nightfall, three different funds had been started to pay for the funerals of the nine deceased girls and help with the families after the fact. David Fisher was a local Ohio inspector of factories, workshops, and public buildings. He stated that his office isn't required to inspect a building unless there is a complaint. So no complaints had been made about the outhouse at Pleasant Ridge, and so it was never inspected. He told the Inquirer that Pleasant Ridge had a sewer system, and so they did not need a vault at all. Reverend Haman, a roughly 200-pound man and member of the building committee, said that for 6 years he would, and I am not joking, jump on the floors of the outhouse to test them. That's their official test. In fact, he had done so just months before the collapse. So Zimmerman said he checked the privy almost daily to look for graffiti and never noticed an issue with the floor. He also said there would be 40 girls in there at any given time, but that it's hard to believe given it's such a small space. The day after the collapse, Henry Swift, a janitor at Pleasant Ridge from 1884 to 1903, spoke with Constable Lewis Hare, the coroner's investigator. So it's kind of like an assistant. Swift said that in April 1903, he had noticed light coming through the vault into the privy. He went to look closer and saw that the stone wall on one side of the building had bulged and that some of the stones had fallen out. So this created a hole about 2 feet in diameter and a foot above the ground. So basically it's a giant hole in the wall underneath this building. So it's a hole in the wall of what is holding up the building. Swift told Principal Zimmerman what he had found and was instructed to talk to Reverend Haman. Okay, so Haman told Swift to place some boards in front of the hole until he, Haman, could arrange a repair. Swift stated, "I nailed boards across the entrance, and I did not use ordinary nails. I used spikes." So that'll fix it. He also said that he thought the floor seemed solid enough, but the foundation of the privy was crumbling. When Henry Swift left Pleasant Ridge for another job in the fall of 1903. He said that the boards were still there and the repairs had not been made. So in the fall of 1903, the privy had a hole in the wall that was exposing the interior to the elements and a crumbling foundation and a boarded up entrance. Inspector Fisher eventually looked at the privy with Ward Baldwin, who was a consulting engineer. After viewing the building and the joists that had been set aside for inspection, they were in shock. Fisher says, "My lord, they ought not to have used yellow pine for these joists. That building had been unsafe for a long period. Gases and water in the vault would rot pine easily. Red cedar ought to have been used. Iron girders ought to have been used. This building has been unsafe almost from its erection because the girders were insufficiently fastened to the framework." Cool, guys. Without even checking it, Fisher condemned the boys' privy, assuming it was built in the same manner. So, on Sunday, September 25th, 1903, the church bells began to ring at 9 a.m. when the first funeral started and didn't stop until the final funeral of the day at 4 p.m. Four girls were buried that day. Four female classmates of Emma Steinkamp had been asked to carry her casket. Grief overwhelmed them. They are kids, after all. After they got the casket to the front of the church, so four boys took over for them. 10-year-old Edna Thee's funeral service was also that day. The family of 9-year-old Amelia Hess had a ceremony at their home, and the Card sisters were cremated. Dr. Sonor was so moved by the bravery of the men that went into the vault and recovered the 9 bodies that he had medals made for each. Dr. Sonor asks, "While the citizens are speaking about helping the families of the dead, have they forgotten the 4 men who in the hour of need proved heroes?" Which, that's a noble thing for him to point out, because keep in mind, his daughter went through this whole ordeal. But yeah, there were just strangers across the street that heard these kids yelling. They dropped everything and they jumped in a pit of poo and saved, I think it was 9 girls. They pulled 9 more out on their own. So over $1,000 was raised to help after the disaster. The mayor's wife suggested purchasing a marble slab to be placed in the schoolyard to represent the pure, carefree, innocent lives of those lost. So essentially kind of like a headstone, like a memorial stone. But Ms. Venable, the high school teacher, spoke to the mayor about concerns from the teaching staff regarding the memorial stone. They thought it would be a constant reminder of the tragedy and suggested a stained glass window for the school building instead. Word quickly spread that the funds raised would be going towards a memorial, and the community was not happy. It was their belief that the money raised was to pay for the girls' funerals, and that any leftover money should then be split between the families. And thankfully, this is what the mayor chose to do with the funds. Coroner Weaver cited suffocation as the cause of death for the 9 girls and declared gross negligence on the part of the Board of Education. No charges were ever filed and no indictments were ever issued. So I'd like to read out the names of the victims of the Cincinnati Privy Disaster. Loretta Fink was 12, Emma Steinkamp 13, Amelia Hess 9, Martha Burr 8, Edna Thee 10, Lillian Witham 13, Hazel Glover 8, Fosta Card 11, and Charmian Card 9. There's also the names of the rescuers: William Schultz, John Carroll, Reverend Lampert, Principal Thomas Zimmerman, Una Venable, and Dr. Ulysses G. Sonor. And that's all for this story. Come back next week to learn what else has been hidden.